This is Report to Wyoming.
I'm Colby Fedor, and my guest today is John Kotek with the Nuclear Energy Institute. He's responsible for providing policy and public affairs leadership on financial, economic, tax, electricity market, and environmental issues related to the nuclear energy industry. In 2015, he was appointed to the position of Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary for the Department of Energy Office of Nuclear Energy and was nominated by President Obama in October 2015 to serve as Assistant Secretary for Nuclear Energy. And in that role, he was responsible for the DOE's research efforts on current and future nuclear energy systems, maintaining the government's nuclear energy research infrastructure, establishing a path forward for the nation's spent nuclear fuel, and high-level nuclear waste management. Let's just jump into it. Can you tell me how Wyoming's nuclear capacity could grow 63% by 2050 with the ADVANCE Act?
Well, certainly we expect to see nuclear capacity grow around the country and around the world. You may have taken note that during the prior presidential administration, President Biden signed a pledge to triple nuclear generation by the middle of the century. President Trump, in his May executive orders, is trying to exceed that and actually get up to 4x. Of our nuclear generation by 2050. So there's a lot of room for growth in nuclear power. Of course, you don't have nuclear electricity generation in Wyoming today, but you've got some coming soon with the TerraPower project. And given Wyoming's very strong history as a supplier of electricity, not just for itself, but for its neighbors as well, I think there's a lot of opportunity to grow beyond that.
So Wyoming's producing about 81% of the United States uranium. Can we expect that number to go up? Are other states also positioned to boost the country's production?
Yeah, Wyoming is absolutely a leader in that regard. And so I do expect to see that growth continue. As I'm sure folks in the state know, a lot of mining activity depends on prices in the market and whether resources are economically viable. And with prices up now and expected to be up for some time, it looks like there's a potential for continued strong growth in that sector in the state.
And again, I'll say it, I don't think it can be understated that Wyoming is one of the top U.S. uranium producers, but how does that compare to other countries known for their uranium production like Kazakhstan and Canada?
Yeah, so those are much larger suppliers. So overall, the U.S. only produces, on the order of 1% of global uranium. So there's quite a bit coming from Canada, Kazakhstan, Australia, some other countries as well.
So we're definitely seeing signs here in Wyoming already that uranium and nuclear energy will probably be a huge part of the state's economy. There was a huge conference here in Casper last week that brought people from around the world to talk about uranium and Wyoming's role in production. And I'm just wondering, why now? Why are the stars aligning now?
Well, there's a confluence of interests that are coming together here to increase demand for nuclear power. The thing that's been in the news the most, I guess, recently has been this explosion in demand growth from data centers and for AI types of applications, which, as I'm sure your listeners know, are very energy hungry. Even before that, there was a real interest in growing nuclear power output in the U.S. and around the world. Some people like nuclear because it's a low carbon energy resource on a life cycle basis. Increasingly, people are paying attention to the fact that nuclear is reliable and resilient. And so when you fuel a nuclear reactor, for example, once you've started the reactor up, it can run from 18 to 24 months without having to stop to refuel. Right? That's today's reactors. Others can go even longer than that. And so you remove the potential for disruption if your supply chain gets interrupted. So that can be really important in extreme weather conditions because, of course, you don't build an electric grid to serve load on the average day. You build it to serve demand on the worst day, right? When you really need that power, it's really hot, it's really cold, what have you. And nuclear is there, right, when you need it. And so that's caused a lot of people to be interested in nuclear power. And so with this demand growth that we're seeing now, it's really a conversation about and. We're going to need nuclear and we're going to need existing resources if we're going to meet this growth in demand for electricity. That's important because things like, you know, winning the AI race against China, having the power we need to meet our national security objectives, that's going to require us to build new generating capacity of all sorts at a rate that we haven't seen for a generation at least. And nuclear has an important role to play in that. And I think Wyoming has a huge role to play in making those nuclear ambitions come true.
How do you gauge public support for nuclear energy?
So interestingly, nuclear power is the one technology over the last decade or so that has seen public support go up. Right now, it's, you know, it's still not the same place as some other technologies. But what we find is that public support for nuclear is increasing. And the more people know about nuclear, the more they support it. So the more they understand that reliability attribute, the energy security benefits of nuclear, the clean generation, the well-paying long-term jobs that nuclear creates, the more that we get those messages out there, the more support for nuclear goes up.
So here in Casper, well, actually it was in Natrona County in one of a neighboring small town, town halls have been packed with people expressing legitimate concerns and fears. And I just wonder, how are uranium producers going to allay some of those fears, or at least hear all of those concerns for the people that live here in Wyoming?
Yeah, and so there's a wide range of activity going on in Wyoming, so apologies for the long response, but I think it's worth kind of breaking it down a little bit. Right, so there is a conversation there in your area about a microreactor company potentially setting up a manufacturing facility there. And so that's one conversation that's going on. Certainly there's the TerraPower reactor project, you know, down in the southwestern part of the state, that will be a power producing facility. The mining activity in the state is something that, as we discussed earlier, I expect to continue to grow. Certainly with any sort of mining activity, you know, there are some, you know, waste you've got to manage, what have you, but the technology has changed considerably over the decades. And so whereas in the old days you might have had, you know, shaft mining for uranium, for example, more and more you have something called in situ recovery, where you're pumping a solution into the subsurface and then extracting the uranium or whatever else you're after. So that results in significantly less in the way of byproducts. So that's a separate consideration. There are other conversations in the state about using, for example, microreactors to help provide power for mining operations, potentially bringing fuel fabrication into the state to provide fuels for advanced reactors. And so there's a wide range of activity under consideration in the state. Each of them, of course, have their own, you know, particular questions that are going to need to be answered in terms of, you know, waste generation or facility safety or what have you. But big picture, the nuclear industry has truly an enviable safety record. And if you look, you know, compare nuclear with other energy resources, nuclear is equal to or better than all others in terms of overall environmental and safety.
Yeah, and I think I'm personally very optimistic about the potential for nuclear energy here in Wyoming. So it will be interesting to see how companies go forward with the educational piece and building trust with the people that live here.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Where else can we look to see where this has been done and how it's going? Because I think that people are nervous about being the first to venture into the unknown in anything, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And maybe I'll answer that question using what we call the nuclear fuel cycle as a framework, okay? Because nuclear energy, as folks sure know, you know, nuclear energy relies on capturing energy released by the splitting of a uranium atom in a nuclear reactor to turn a turbine or heat a working fluid or what have you. So you start with that uranium. As you mentioned, Wyoming is a leader in the American experience in Wyoming. The next two stages, you have to take that uranium that you've dug out of the ground, and you have to enrich it, concentrate a certain isotope that exists in that uranium. So you have to convert that uranium to a gas, enrich that, and then turn it back into a solid and manufacture fuel. The conversion and enrichment don't take place in Wyoming. Those are things that have been historically in the Ohio River Valley here in the U.S. So in southern Illinois is where we have our conversion facility. Enrichment has taken place in Ohio, in Kentucky, Tennessee, and then more recently there's a large facility in New Mexico that does that. Then after you've converted that back into solid, the fuel manufacturing takes place in places like North Carolina, Washington State, South Carolina. There is a proposal over at Gillette to potentially stand up a fuel fabrication facility there. So that's another place where Wyoming could get involved. And then you use that in a nuclear reactor. And while you haven't had commercial nuclear power in Wyoming, you have actually had a military microreactor that was used back in the 60s. To power a facility in Wyoming. But you know, principally, we're talking about the large reactors in the U.S. And so states like Illinois, South Carolina, North Carolina have the largest numbers of nuclear reactors in the United States. After that fuel has been in the reactor 5 or 6 years, then it becomes what we call used or spent fuel. Then it'll be stored on site. So you put it first in a cooling pool for a couple of years to cool down, then you put it in a dry storage container. Those sorts of facilities exist in 30-plus states around the country. There's actually one right down I-25 from you all in Colorado. It's something called Fort St. Marie site, which interestingly is adjacent to a natural gas plant. But probably the biggest and best example is the Idaho National Laboratory over just outside of Idaho Falls, where I worked there for a dozen years. And there you have three operating nuclear reactors, small ones, on the site. But one of them is actually a fairly large test reactor. The spent fuel from those facilities stays there on the site. Spent fuel from other reactors, university reactors, for example, has come to the Idaho National Lab site, and all of the spent fuel from the nuclear Navy. So the submarines and the aircraft carriers that are powered by nuclear, after that fuel has done its service in the Navy facilities, it happens to be 30 plus years of reactor fuel life, it goes to Idaho for long-term storage. And so if you want an example of a safe, long-term spent fuel storage facility, you need to look no further than your neighbors to the west there in Idaho Falls, where they've been storing used fuel for decades. Me personally, my office, the facility I worked in out at the lab, we had three spent fuel storage facilities within a couple hundred yards of where I worked. So I got a lot of familiarity with this stuff and know how carefully and safely it's managed and stored over the long term. So sorry for the long answer, but there's a lot of examples to point to.
No, that's okay. You had me at isotope. I thought that was really good. What kind of economic impacts do you see on the horizon for Wyoming? I know you don't have a crystal ball, but how many jobs could be created, and how do you think this will affect our state?
Well, so I can speak to examples from the existing industry to at least paint a picture, right? So an existing nuclear reactor will support several thousand jobs during construction. So the two large plants that were most recently completed in Georgia, at peak they had 9,000 people on site, all told, because you bring, of course, different crafts in at different times. They had north of 20,000 people who worked on that project over its decade or so of construction time. So there's a lot of economic activity that goes into the construction piece. Now, the reactors that are under consideration for the state are smaller, so you wouldn't expect numbers that large, but it gives you a sense of, you know, these are pretty big construction projects, and so the Natrium project in particular will create quite a number of jobs in that region. And then once you get the plant up and running, you're looking at several hundred people on site responsible for the operation, maintenance, security, you know, other aspects of operating the facility. In the case of existing reactors, every 18 or 24 months or so, you also have what they call a refueling outage, where they shut the reactor down and change out the fuel. That's when they also do big maintenance activities. And so you might have 1,000 people coming in from other parts of the country for an intensive several week period to conduct maintenance and refueling. So that can be a real big economic activity for a community. When it comes to the operations of the facility, that's where nuclear really shines, because as I mentioned, a plant will employ several hundred workers, but these are facilities that in the U.S. at least, almost all of our reactors are currently licensed to operate 60 years. Several have received approval to operate out to 80 years. You might even see them go longer than that. And so these are going to be well-paying, very long-term jobs. And so I know people who are second and even third generation at the same nuclear power plant in their community. You know, grandpa built it, dad helped operate it, now the daughter's, they're working as an operator herself. Right? That sort of story is common in the nuclear industry because these facilities tend to become an economic engine for their community. And so I think you can expect to see thousands of jobs created in Wyoming over the years. It depends on what, whether it's supply chain jobs, reactor jobs, more mining, what have you. They'll have kind of different attributes and different pay scales. But big picture, nuclear is welcomed in part because nuclear jobs are the highest paying jobs in the energy sector. And so, sure, they take a higher degree of skill and training. But on the other hand, the rewards are quite large for working on nuclear.
And my next question is kind of layered because I'm trying to get a sense of maybe cultural impacts. And I'm just curious, is there like in the country a hub of nuclear industry, as in, and forgive me, this is kind of an awkward way to ask, but, if Silicon Valley is to tech, what is, blank is to nuclear energy?
Yeah, that's such a great question. And there are a couple of examples of that. Now, I mentioned Idaho Falls earlier. Idaho is the nation's lead nuclear R&D lab. And so when it comes to a center of gravity for nuclear R&D and initial technology demonstrations, Southeastern Idaho is in many ways the place to be. A lot of the advanced reactor developers are intending to demonstrate their first-of-a-kind reactor something called the National Reactor Innovation Center that's housed there at the INL. When it comes to the industry itself, if you just look at headcount, what number of companies or which state has the largest number of companies in the nuclear sector, it's actually Pennsylvania as of the latest count from a couple of years ago. And it's not surprising that large number of reactors in Pennsylvania, not the largest, Illinois's got the most, but the first commercial reactor in the U.S. was in Pennsylvania. You've also got a naval nuclear propulsion program research facility in Pennsylvania. And so because they were first in a lot of the demonstration and initial deployment of the technology, a lot of the capability grew up in that state and then was used and drawn upon by other states. As nuclear went along, you also started to see a center of gravity in kind of the Charlotte, North Carolina area, because the states in and around that area are very nuclear intensive. So if you look at Georgia, Alabama, South Carolina, North Carolina, Tennessee, those are all states where you're looking at getting anywhere from 30% to 50%+ of your electricity from nuclear, as compared to the national average of 18%. So there's a real hub of activity down there, and a lot of the companies that provide fuel or service and supply in the industry are concentrated in that area in addition to Pennsylvania.
Now, I want to talk about your excitement for the Wyoming's potential here. What fuels that?
Well, and that part of it is the story I just told in the question you just asked, because first movers with the next generation of nuclear technology are going to have a real advantage, right? And already you're going to have the first commercial sodium cold fast reactor in Wyoming. Yeah, there were some 50, 60 years ago, kind of experimental level, but this is really going to be the first, strictly commercial facility in the country. That presents opportunities, right, to build up supply chain, to build up capabilities that can then be transferred other places. Wyoming's also a state that understands what it is to be an energy-producing state. And so, you produce far more electricity within the state than you use, right? And you become the power provider to a lot of other states in the Western Interconnect. Having lived in Idaho as long as I did, I knew how reliant we were on things like the Bridger plant. Right? Idaho, when I lived there at least, was only producing about two-thirds of the electricity it produced in-state. The rest was coming in from facilities like Bridger. Right? And so I think there's a real opportunity for Wyoming to continue to be that you know, center of gravity, as it were, for power production in the West, and produce electricity to serve needs beyond your borders. And you know, that's got real value to it, because you know, power plant jobs are tend to be well-paying jobs, right? And when you look at the capability that exists in the state, you know, you've got people who are really, really good at running coal plants. Well, what our analyses have found is that about 80% of the jobs in a nuclear plant have a direct analog to a coal plant. And so, you know, if you've got a skill set that, you know, a capacity you've built in that state to provide workers to run coal plants, they're going to be, a lot of that's going to be directly transferable to nuclear plants that can come to the state.
And then I know, you know, Wyoming is a coal state, but for a long time, people have been asking our leaders, how will we diversify the economy? We need a more diverse economy. So I'm wondering what's being done on the federal level to maybe incentivize doing just that in Wyoming. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, so there are quite a number of incentives for new nuclear deployment. Now, these apply, you know, nationwide, but there are particular, I'll say, bonus incentives that have been written into the law that incentivize building new generation, in particular new nuclear generation, in communities that have hosted coal or other fossil fuel infrastructure in the pattern that they're currently hosted now. And so Wyoming will have a leg up in terms of receiving some of these incentives. And in the most recent action by Congress, and there's something called the Reconciliation Bill, folks might be aware that, you know, there was quite a paring back of incentives for some technologies. Wind and solar in particular saw their incentives sunsetting earlier than was originally in the law under the Inflation Reduction Act. Nuclear was treated differently. People recognized that, you know, we've been incentivizing wind on the federal level since 1992, solar even longer than that. We haven't really done much for nuclear in the way that we did it for wind and solar. So let's give nuclear some runway. And so policymakers decided to keep incentives in place for nuclear that are being sunset for other technologies.
Okay. And then how much of the mining is controlled federally versus just by private, I don't know how you would say, private business?
You know, in many instances, you do have privately held claims on federal lands, right? So there is that public-private partnership that has to occur to allow the mining to successfully take place. And, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of government-owned land in Wyoming, and where I lived in Idaho, it was like something like 62% of the land was owned by the government. Nevada's even higher than that. So I would imagine that a lot of the uranium resource in Wyoming is on federal lands, but, you know, particularly the current administration, I see them as very supportive of expanding mining in the U.S. If you look back to the first Trump administration, he put together a nuclear fuel working group, which issued a set of recommendations, one of which was to take steps to dramatically expand mining here in the U.S. And so I expect them to remain very supportive of the sector during the current administration.
Is there anything with uranium that's going to be a big, like a something to be produced or something key when it comes to nuclear energy and production?
I think it, you know, it's the nuclear fuel that's going to be the big thing. There are other uses of uranium, but when you're talking about uranium mining, that essentially means you're talking about extraction for conversion into nuclear fuel.
And then a conversation probably for much later, but I guess it could happen now, is the waste. Has anyone posited what to do with it besides just storing it?
Yeah, and so that's something I've actually spent a fair bit of my career on. And so, as I described earlier, I've worked in facilities that store this material. It's straightforward to manage in that, when you take spent fuel out of a reactor, it looks just how it looked when it went in, right? And so for today's commercial reactors, it's, steel tubes 12 to 14 feet long, gathered together in bundles of a few hundred pins, and you've got a few hundred assemblies in a reactor. You take that out when the fuel is quote spent, cool that off, and then put it in dry storage. So you know where it is, solid, right? And it's, once it's in the cask, it's just concrete and steel cask on a concrete pad, and you air cool it. So it's easy to account for. It's easy to protect people and the environment from that material. So we can continue doing that safely for decades. I don't worry about that. The long-term solution is what we call a deep geologic repository or other deep geologic disposal. So that just means find a suitable environment deep underground in which you can place canisters or other waste forms. Other countries are far ahead of us in that regard. So Finland, for example, they have sited and constructed and licensed their repository. They're in a testing phase now. They're going to start placing spent fuel here in the next couple of years, if not sooner. Sweden has identified their site. Our friends to the north in Canada went through a volunteer process where they issued request for expressions of interest. 22 communities stepped forward and said, we'd like to look at this. Ultimately, some communities dropped out. Some got screened out for geologic considerations or other reasons. They got down to two, and they finally made their selection. I think it was late last year. So they've got their volunteer host community for their disposal site, and they'll begin the process of constructing that in the next couple of years. So, we know what needs to be done. Other countries have done it. Our spent fuel management program is at a standstill here because we need Congress to act. There was a facility or a site in Nevada that was chosen to serve as a repository that fell apart. It was declared unworkable by the Obama administration 15 years ago, and Congress hasn't funded it since. And so we kind of need to start fresh here in the U.S. So the good news is we know how to manage this stuff safely over a very long period of time. Nuclear Regulatory Commission has said, 100 years anyway is fine. So we need to get on with it on the one hand. On the other hand, it's something that is straightforward to manage and is being managed safely now.
Awesome. Well, with the last couple of minutes, I just wanted to know your thoughts on, I guess in the email that I got, we're looking at Wyoming's nuclear capacity and potential in the next 25 years. What about the next handful of years?
Well, so I think it's going to depend on whether we can get the financial conditions right for new nuclear construction. Now, I think there's a lot. I think the mining growth will continue given the global interest in nuclear. I think that things like TerraPower, other proposals in the state for either reactor construction or fuel fabrication, those look really promising. There could be proposals for additional plants to be constructed. There's a lot of AI and data center demand growth out there, for example. People looking for firm, clean power that nuclear can provide. Wyoming could be an attractive place for that sort of thing. If we can get the financing right, line up, the interested customers with the companies that are interested in building and operating these facilities, with others who will take a long-term view in the value of investing in nuclear power, you can see quite a lot of potential unlocked. I do think we're going to need to see some federal participation in probably the first handful of projects to help get over what we call the early of a kind hump. The first of a kind of any new technology costs more and takes a little longer. And so, finding ways to share that risk in the short term so that we can unlock the technology for the long term. Because the big prize is, as important as the U.S. and the North American market is, it's the global market. There's so much global demand for new nuclear. Right now, we're getting our lunch eaten by the Russians and the Chinese in the global marketplace. We used to own that market. And through the participation of states like Wyoming, demonstrating technology in the state and then creating supply chain capabilities, we can get in there and compete and win and reclaim our leadership role in the global nuclear marketplace.
This has been Report to Wyoming, presented in the public interest by Town Square Media.